a breed of tame goats which might supply me when my powder and shot should all be spent. I made a collar for this little creature with a string which I had made from some rope yarn, which I always carried about me. I led him along, though with some difficulty, for he did pull away from the beast he smelt upon me, till I came to my bower. There I enclosed him and left him, for I was very impatient to be at home, from whence I had been absent above a month. I cannot express what a satisfaction it was to me to come into my old hutch and lie down in the hammock bed of the mate, for so I still thought of it. This little wandering journey without a settled place of abode had been so unpleasant to me, most pointedly the days in the shadowed and strange valley, that my own house was a perfect settlement to me. It rendered everything about me so comfortable, I resolved I would never go a great way from it again while it should be my lot to stay on the island. I reposed myself here a week to rest and regale myself after my long journey, during which most of the time was taken up in the weighty affair of making a cage for my Poll, who still spent much time scared of the beast within me. Then I began to think of the poor kid, which I had penned within my little circle, and resolved to fetch it home or give it some food. I went and found it where I left it, for indeed it could not get out, but was almost starved for want of food. I went and cut boughs of trees and branches of such shrubs as I could find, and threw it over. The rainy season of the autumnal equinox was now come, and I spent the 30th of September in the same solemn manner as before, being the anniversary of my landing on the island, having now been there 2 years. I spent the whole day in humble and thankful acknowledgement for the many wonderful mercies which my solitary condition was attended with, and without which it might have been infinitely more miserable. I gave humble and hearty thanks to God for having been pleased to discover me, that it was possible the beast and I might be more happy even in this solitary condition than we should have been in the enjoyment of society. My Scarecrows, First Words, My Third Year Inventions. It was now I began sensibly to feel how much more happy the life I now led was than the wicked, cursed life I led all the past part of my days. From this moment I began to conclude in my mind it was possible for me to be more happy in this forsaken, solitary condition than it was probable I should ever have been in any other particular state in the world. Thus, in this disposition of mind, I began my third year. Though I have not given the reader the trouble of so particular an account of my works this year as the first, yet in general it may be observed I was very seldom idle, having divided my time according to the several daily employments that were before me. To this short time allowed for labour, I desire may be added the exceeding laboriousness of my work. For want of tools, want of help, and want of skill, everything I did took up out of my time. But notwithstanding this, with patience and labour I went through many things, indeed everything my circumstances made necessary for me to do, as will appear by what follows. I was now in the months of November and December, expecting my crop of barley and rice. The ground I had manured or dug up for them was not great, but now my crop promised very well. When, on a sudden, I found I was in danger of losing it all again by enemies of several sorts, which it was scarce possible to keep from it. First, the goats and wild creatures which I called hares, who, tasting the sweetness of the blade, lay in it night and day as soon as it came up, and ate it so close it could get no time to shoot up into stalk. I saw no remedy for this but by making an enclosure about it with a hedge, which I did with a great deal of toil, and the more because it required speed. However, as my arable land was but small and suited to my crop, I got it tolerably well fenced in about 3 weeks' time. Shooting some of the creatures in the daytime, in a little time the enemies forsook the place, and the corn grew very strong and well, and began to ripen apace. But as the goats and hares ruined me before, while my corn was in the blade, so the birds were as likely to ruin me now, when it was in the ear. Going along by the place to see how it throve, I saw my little crop surrounded with fowls who stood there, as it were, watching till I should be gone. I immediately let fly among them, for I always had my gun with me. I had no sooner shot, but there rose up a little cloud of fowls which I had not seen at all from among the corn itself. This touched me sensibly, for I foresaw in a few days they would devour all my hopes. I should be starved, and never able to raise a crop at all. What to do I could not tell. However, I resolved not to lose my corn if possible, though I should watch it night and day. In the first place, I went among it to see what damage was already done, and found they had spoiled a good deal of it. But as it was yet too green for them, the loss was not so great. The remainder was likely to be a good crop if it could be saved. I stayed by it to load my gun, and then coming away, I could see the thieves sitting among all the trees about me, as if they only waited till I was gone away, and the event proved it to be so. As I walked off, as if gone, I was no sooner out of their sight than they dropped down one by one into the corn again. I was so provoked I could not have patience to stay till more came on, knowing every grain they eat now was, as it might be said, a peck loaf to me in the consequence. I rushed on them, and my cries with the scent of the beast did make them run off again, this time all the farther, though I did suspect they would return for the sweet corn, a feast they had never tasted afore. As it would be, however, this was the first night of the November moon. I did stay by my crops until the mantle of the beast did come upon me, and peered with great intent through the smoked lens, or as best could be done, through the intoxicated muddle the beast made of my mind. In the morn I did follow the tracks and spoor of the beast, and located some of its prey. Half of a hare, and another all but whole the beast had killed, just for the joy of the hunt, and a she-goat, which had been gutted and eaten out. This was what I wished for. I took them up and served them as we serve notorious thieves in England, viz., hanged them in chains for a terror to others. It is impossible to imagine this should have such an effect as it had. The fowls not only never came to the corn, but, in short, they forsook all that part of the island, and I could never see a bird near the place as long as my scarecrows hung there. This I was very glad of, you may be sure, and about the latter end of December, which was our second harvest of the year, I reaped my corn. At the end of all my harvesting, I found that out of my half peck of seed I had near 2 bushels of rice, and above 2.5 bushels of barley, by my guess, for I had no measure. However, this was great encouragement to me. I foresaw that, in time, it would please God to supply me with bread. Yet here I was perplexed again. I neither knew how to grind or make meal of my corn, or indeed how to clean it and part it, nor if made into meal, how to make bread of it, and if how to make it, yet I knew not how to bake it. These things being added to my desire of having a good quantity for store, and to secure a constant supply, I resolved not to taste any of this crop, but to preserve it all for seed against the next season, and in the meantime to employ all my study and hours of working to accomplish this great work of providing myself with corn and bread. It might be truly said, now I worked for my bread. It is a little wonderful, and what I believe few people have thought much upon, viz., the strange multitude of little things necessary in providing, producing, curing, dressing, making and finishing this one article of bread. But now I was to prepare more land, for I had seed enough to sow above an acre of ground. Before I did this, I had a week's work at least to make me a spade. When it was done, it was but a sorry one indeed, and very heavy, and required double labour to work with it. However, I went through and sowed my seed in 2 large flat pieces of ground, as near my house as I could find them to my mind, and fenced them in with a good hedge. This work took me up full 3 months, because a great part of the time was in the wet season, when I could not go abroad. Within doors, when it rained, and I could not go out, I diverted myself with talking to my parrot and teaching him to speak. I slowly learned him to know his own name, and at last to speak it out pretty loud. Paul, which was the first word I ever heard spoken in the island by any mouth but my own. It also happened, some time after, making a pretty large fire for cooking my meat, when I went to put it out, after I had done with it, I found a broken piece of one of my earthenware vessels in the fire, burnt as hard as stone and red as a tile. I was surprised to see it, and said to myself, "Certainly they might be made to burn whole, if they would burn broken." This set me to study how to order my fire, so as to make it burn some pots. No joy at a thing of so mean a nature was ever equal to mine, when I found I had made an earthen pot that would bear the fire. I had hardly patience to stay till they were cold, before I set one on the fire again, with some water in it to boil me some meat. With a piece of kid I made some very good broth, though I wanted oatmeal and several other ingredients requisite to make it so good as I would have had it been. My next concern was to get a stone mortar to stamp or beat some corn in. After a great deal of time lost in searching for a stone, I gave it over, and resolved to look out a great block of hardwood, which I found indeed much easier. My next difficulty was to make a sieve to dress my meal, and to part it from the bran and the husk, without which I did not see it possible I could have any bread. The remedy I found for this was, at last recollecting I had among the seamen's clothes some neckcloths or calico or muslin, and with some pieces of these I made 3 small sieves, proper enough for the work, and thus I made shift for some years. The baking part was the next thing to be considered, and how I should make bread when I came to have corn. For an oven I was indeed puzzled. At length I found out an expedient for that also, and thus I baked my barley loaves and became, in little time, a good pastry cook into the bargain. I made myself several cakes and puddings of the rice, but made no pies, as I had nothing to put into them except the flesh of fowls or goats. It need not be wondered at, if all these things took me up most part of the 3rd year of my abode here. It is to be observed, in the interval of these things, I had my new harvest and husbandry to manage. I reaped my corn in its season, and carried it home as well as I could, and laid it up in the ear till I had time to rub it out, for I had no floor to thrash it on, or instrument to thrash it with. And now, indeed, my stock of corn increasing, I wanted to build my barns bigger. I wanted a place to lay it up in, for the increase of the corn now yielded me so much, I had of the barley about 20 bushels, and of rice as much, or more. I resolved to begin to use it freely, for my bread had been quite gone a great while. I resolved also to see what quantity would be sufficient for me a whole year, and to sow but once a year. Upon the whole, I found the 40 bushels of barley and rice were much more than I could consume in a year. I resolved to sow just the same quantity every year that I sowed the last, in hopes such a quantity would provide me with bread, etc. Years go by, my sea voyage, the ominous voice. I finished my 4th year in this place, and kept my anniversary with the same devotion and with as much comfort as before. By a constant study and serious application to the Word of God, I gained a different knowledge from what I had before. I entertained different notions of things. I looked now upon the world as a thing remote, which I had nothing to do with, no expectation from, and indeed, no desires about. In a word, I had nothing to do with it, nor was ever likely to have. I thought it looked, as we may perhaps look upon it hereafter, viz., as a place I'd lived in, but was come out of it. In the first place, I was here removed from all the risk of the world. I had neither the danger of the beast, the need of concealment, nor the pride of life. I had nothing to covet, for I had all I was now capable of enjoying. I was lord of the whole manor. If I pleased, I might call myself king or emperor over the whole country which I had possession of. I might have raised shiploadings of corn, but I had no use for it. I had tortoise or turtle enough, but now and then one was as much as I could put to any use. I had timber enough to have built a fleet of ships, and I had grapes enough to have made wine, or to have cured into raisins, to have loaded that fleet when it had been built. I had now brought my state of life to be much more comfortable in itself than it was at first, and much easier to my mind as well as to my body. I often sat down to meet with thankfulness and admired the hand of Providence which had thus spread my table in the wilderness. I learned to look more upon the bright side of my condition and less upon the dark side, and to consider what I enjoyed rather than what I wanted. This gave me sometimes such secret comforts that I cannot express them. All our discontents about what we want appeared to me to spring from the want of thankfulness for what we have. The beast, too, had come to accept the island as its home and territory. The change was a thing of gentleness, as neither of us fought to hold back the other a whit when either the moon or the dawn came. It had outgrown its moody reticence, and once again ran and howled and killed, sometime for sport and other time for food. It did not leave my side of the island, and rare was it that I woke less than a half-hour's walk from either my cave or my country home, as I called it. I had now been here so long that many things which I brought on shore for my help were either quite gone or very much wasted and near spent. My ink, as I observed, had been gone for some time, all but a very little, which I eked out with paper, till it was so pale it scarce left any appearance of black upon the paper. As long as it lasted, I made use of it to minute down the days of the month on which any remarkable thing happened to me. My clothes, too, began to decay. As to linen, I had none for a great while, except some checkered shirts which I found in the chests of the other seamen, and which I preserved, because many times I could bear no clothes on but a shirt. It was a very great help to me. I had, among all the men's clothes of the ship, almost 3 dozen of shirts. There were also several thick watch-coats of the seamen's which were left, but they were too hot to wear. Though it is true the weather was so hot there was no need of clothes, yet I could not go quite naked, no, though I had been inclined to it, which I was not. Nor could I abide the thought of it, though I was all alone. The reason why I could not go quite naked was I could not bear the heat of the sun. The very heat blistered my skin, whereas, with a shirt on, the air itself made some motion, and whistling under the shirt was twofold cooler than without it. No more could I ever bring myself to go out in the heat of the sun without a cap or a hat. The heat of the sun, beating with such violence as it does in that place, would give me the headache by darting so directly upon my head so I could not bear it. Whereas if I put on my hat, it would go away. Upon these views, I began to consider about putting the few rags I had, which I called clothes, into some order. I had worn out all the waistcoats I had, and my business was now to try if I could not make jackets out of the great watch-coats I had by me, and with such other materials as I had. So I set to work at tailoring, or rather a botching, for I made most piteous work of it. However, I made shift to make 2 or 3 new waistcoats, which I hoped would serve me a great while. As for breeches or drawers, I made but a very sorry shift indeed till afterwards. I have mentioned I saved the skins of all the creatures I killed. The first thing I made of these was a great cap for my head, with the hair on the outside to shoot off the rain. This I performed so well, after this I made me a suit of clothes of the skins, That is to say, a waistcoat and breeches open at the knees, and both loose. They were rather wanting to keep me cool than warm. I must not omit to acknowledge they were wretchedly made, for if I was a bad carpenter, I was a worse tailor. However, when I was abroad, if it happened to rain, the hair of my waistcoat and cap being uppermost, I was kept very dry. As I had a raft, my next design was to make a cruise round the island. As I had been on the other side in one place, crossing, as I have described it, over the land, so the discoveries I made in that little journey made me very eager to see other parts of the coast. And thus I, every now and then, took a little voyage upon the sea, but never went far out, not far from the little creek, at last, being eager to view the circumference of my little kingdom, I resolved upon my cruise. It was the 6th of November, in the 6th year of my reign, that I set out on this voyage, and I found it much longer than I expected. For though the island itself was not very large, yet when I came to the east side of it, I found a great ledge of black rocks lie out about 2 leagues into the sea, some above water, some under it, which I could not recall having seen there before. Like great teeth they did rise from the sea, some pointed and some angled and some flat, and but for their senseless angles and shapes, some of these black rocks would seem carved. Beyond that ledge was a shoal of sand, lying dry 1/2 league more, so I was obliged to go a great way out to sea to double the point. But I am a warning piece again to all rash and ignorant pilots. No sooner was I come to the point, when I was not even my raft's length from the shore, but I found myself in a great depth of water and a current like the sluice of a mill. It carried my raft along with it with such violence all I could do could not keep her so much as on the edge of it. I found it hurried me farther and farther out, and all I could do with my paddles for more than a day signified nothing. Now I began to give myself over for lost. I had no prospect before me but of perishing, not by the sea, for that was calm enough, but of starving for hunger. I had my victuals, but what was all this to being driven into the vast ocean, where there was no shore, no mainland, or island, for 1,000 leagues at least? However, I found being between 2 great currents, viz. That on the south side, which had hurried me away, and that on the north, which lay about 1 league on the other side in the wake of the island, I found the water at least still, and running no way. Having still a breeze of wind fair for me, I kept on paddling for the island, though not making such fresh way as I did heading out away from it. About 4 o'clock in the evening on the 4th day, being then within 1 league of the island, I found the point of rocks which occasioned this disaster, stretching out, as is described before, to the southward, and casting off the current more southerly had, of course, made another eddy to the north. I stretched across this eddy, slanting northwest, and in about 1 hour came within about 1 mile of the shore, where, it being smooth water, I soon got to land. When I was on shore I fell to my knees and gave God thanks for my deliverance. Refreshing myself with such things as I had, I brought my raft close to the shore in a little cove I had spied under some trees, and laid me down to sleep, being quite spent with the labour and fatigue of the voyage. I was now at a great loss which way to get home with my raft. I had run so much hazard, and knew too much of the case to think attempting it by the way I went out. What might be on the other side, I mean the west side, I knew not, nor had I any mind to run any more ventures. So I only resolved in the morning to make my way westward along the shore, and to see if there was no creek where I might lay up my raft in safety, so as to have her again if I wanted her. In about 3 miles or thereabouts, coasting the shore, I came to a very good inlet about 1 mile over, where I found a very convenient harbour for my boat, where she lay as if she had been in a little dock made on purpose for her. Here I put in, and having stowed my raft very safe, I went on shore to look about me and see where I was. I soon found I had but a little passed by the place where I had been before, when I travelled on foot to that shore. So taking nothing from my raft but my gun, I began my march. The way was comfortable enough after such a voyage as I had been upon, and reaching my old bower in the evening, where I found everything standing as I left it, I always kept it in good order, being, as I have said before, my country house. I got over the fence and laid me down in the shade to rest my limbs, for I was very weary, and fell asleep. But judge, you that read my story, if you can, what a surprise I must be in when I was awakened out of my sleep by a voice calling me by my name several times. Robin! Robin! Robin Crusoe! Poor Robin Crusoe! Where are you, Robin Crusoe? Where are you? I was so dead asleep at first, being fatigued with paddling the first part of the day and with walking the latter part, I did not wake thoroughly. But I did think I dreamt somebody spoke to me. As the voice continued to repeat, Robin Crusoe! Robin Crusoe! At last I began to wake more, and was at first frightened, and started up in the utmost consternation. But no sooner were my eyes open but I saw my Poll sitting on the top of the hedge, and knew it was he that spoke to me, in just such bemoaning language as I had used to talk to him and teach him. Robin Crusoe, he repeated, there you are. And then, quite unexpectedly, did he utter words I had not taught him. And these words did give me a chill and a shiver like the icy sea of England. They will kill you, Robin Crusoe. I confess, at first I was so torn between the joy of hearing my name aloud by one other than I, and a terror at the same after 6 long years, that I did not think on what little Poll did say. Then the import of his words was known to me, and I wondered who had taught my parrot such words, and why, and when.
Robin Crusoe! Robin Crusoe! Squawked he. They come to kill you and eat your flesh. Your beast cannot save you, Robin Crusoe. Your soul shall feed the great dreamer. Ya, ya.
At this did Poll fall into madness, as one who had seen awful things that cannot be unremembered, as, for a while, I thought I may do upon this island. The parrot shook on the hedge, as if chilled, and squawked out many sounds and noises that had no meaning behind them. Though, as I watched and listened, I did hear a pattern, and knew the sounds were a language unknown to me. And Poll called out the same words again and again, as one who chants or prays. And as I listened more, these words did begin to hurt my ears and head, as the sound of a cannon at close quarters may bleed the ears. So did Poll's squawks make me recoil and cover my ears, though they were little louder than his usual cries. Beneath my skin, the beast growled, making its rage at these words known as well. And then Poll stiffened and fell over dead on the floor of my bower. His blood ran from his eyes and beak, as it sometimes is wont to do in man or creature when death comes swift. More Time, My Herd, My Condition. I could not leave Poll in my summer house, nor would I bury him within the walls of my bower. Thus I did climb over the fence, and find a spot beneath a large tree, much like the tree I had first found Poll in many years afore this. Using one of my hatchets and my hands, I made the dead bird a small grave fit for any manor lord or lady. Yet when I climbed back over the wall to retrieve his little body, I discovered I could not tolerate the thought of touching the dead parrot. A great unease hung across my shoulders, and I bethought myself that this was the beast, still angered at the little bird for reasons unknown to me. Then did I realize that this unease was all my own. "This is," I said aloud, what each of God's creatures feels at the sight of me and the smell of the beast under my skin. Is it little wonder none but my hungry goat can abide me? And thus did I wonder what had dwelt beneath Paul's skin and hidden itself in his feathers as it spoke to me. At last I pulled off my great cap and wore it upon my hand like a glove, and even then touching the dead bird gave me a great unease, as if many ants were marching across my bare skin, though there were no such things. This feeling did not pass until dear Paul was buried beneath the soil of the island. That moon the beast was most territorial again, and stalked the forest for 3 nights as one who invites trouble into their lives. I found its tracks crisped and crossed by my summer house, oft approaching the grave of Paul, but never going to it. Together with Paul's dark words, this did worry my thoughts, and the next month was one of much apprehension and reflection for me. By the next moon, though, the beast once again ran and hunted and killed, and I took this as a sign the darkness had passed us by again. In this government of my temper, I remained near a year, lived a very sedate, retired life, as you may well suppose. My thoughts being very much composed as to my condition, and comforted in resigning myself to the dispositions of Providence, I thought I lived very happily in all things, except that of society. I improved myself in this time in all the mechanic exercises which my necessities put me upon applying myself to. I believe I could, upon occasion, have made a very good carpenter, considering how few tools I had. Besides this, I arrived at an unexpected perfection in my earthenware, and contrived well enough to make them with a wheel, which I found easier and better. But I think I was never more vain of my own performance, or more joyful for anything I found out, than for my being able to make a tobacco pipe, though it was a very ugly, clumsy thing when it was done, and only burnt red like other earthenware. Yet, as it was hard and firm, and would draw the smoke, I was comforted with it, for I had been always used to smoke. I began now to perceive my powder abated considerably. This was a want which it was impossible for me to supply, and I began to consider what I must do when I should have no more powder. That is to say, how I should do to kill any goats. I had, as is observed in the 3rd year of my being here, kept a young kid and bred her up tame, and I was in hopes of getting a he-goat. But I could not by any means bring it to pass, as they still fled from the hidden beast, till my kid grew an old goat. As I could never find in my heart to kill her, she died at last of mere age. But being now in the 11th year of my residence, and, as I have said, my ammunition growing low, I set myself to study some art to trap and snare the goats, to see whether I could not catch some of them alive. Particularly, I wanted a she-goat great with young. At length, I resolved to try a pitfall. I dug several large pits in the earth in places where I had observed the goats used to feed. Not to trouble you with particulars, going one morning to see my traps, I found in one of them a large old he-goat, and in one of the others, 3 kids, a male and 2 females. As to the old one, I knew not what to do with him. He was so fierce, I durst not go into the pit to him. I could have killed him, or let him for the beast. But that was not my business, nor would it answer my end. So I let him out, and he ran away, frightened out of his wits once he had smelled the scent of the beast. It was a good while before the kids would feed near me, but throwing them some sweet corn tempted them, and they began to be tame. And now I found if I expected to supply myself with goat's flesh when I had no powder or shot left, breeding some up tame was my only way. But then it occurred to me I must keep the tame from the wild, or else they would always run wild when they grew up. And the beast must be kept out lest it see my herd as a banquet table to slake its own appetites. The only way for this was to have some enclosed piece of ground, well fenced, either with hedge or pail, to keep them in so that those within might not break out, or those without break in. This was a great undertaking for one pair of hands. Yet, as I saw there was an absolute necessity for doing it, my first work was to find out a proper piece of ground where there was herbage for them to eat, water for them to drink, and cover to keep them from the sun. I was about 3 months hedging in the first piece. Till I had done it, I tethered the three kids in the best part of it and used them to feed as near me as possible to make them familiar. Very often, I would go and carry them some ears of barley or a handful of rice. But they would shy away from the scent of the beast and press themselves against the farthest reach of the tether. After my enclosure was finished, and I let them loose, they would huddle together in that part which was away from me. In about a year and a half, I had a flock of about 12 goats, kids and all. In 2 years more, I had 340, besides several I took and killed for my food. After that, I enclosed 5 several pieces of ground to feed them in, with little pens to drive them into, to take them as I wanted, and gates out of one piece of ground into another. But this was not all. Now I not only had goat's flesh to feed on when I pleased, but milk too, a thing which in the beginning I did not so much as think of, and which, when it came into my thoughts, was an agreeable surprise. Now I set up my dairy, and had sometimes a gallon or two of milk in a day. What a table was here spread for me in a wilderness, where I saw nothing at first but to perish for hunger. One morning, well within my 13th year upon the island, I awoke in the hills after the last night of the moon. The beast had run long and hard those past nights, and yet I had a strange uneasiness in my mind to go down to the point of the island. This inclination increased upon me every day, and at length I resolved to travel thither by land, following the edge of the shore. I did so. But had anyone in England been to meet such a man as I was, it must either have frightened him or raised a great deal of laughter. As I frequently stood still to look at myself, I could not but smile at the notion of my travelling through Yorkshire with such an equipage and in such dress. Be pleased to take a sketch of my figure as follows. I had a great, high, shapeless hat, made of a goatskin, with a flap hanging down behind as well, to keep the sun from me as to shoot the rain off from running into my neck. I had a short jacket of goatskin, the skirts coming down to about the middle of the thighs, and a pair of open-kneed breeches of the same. The breeches were made of the skin of an old he-goat, whose hair hung down such a length on either side that, like pantaloons, it reached to the middle of my legs. Stockings and shoes I had none, but it made me a pair of somethings, I scarce know what to call them, like buskins, to flap over my legs and lace on either side like spatterdashes. I had on a broad belt of goatskin dried, which I drew together with 2 thongs of the same instead of buckles. In a kind of a frog on either side of this, instead of a sword and dagger, hung a little saw and a hatchet. I had another belt, not so broad, and fastened in the same manner, which hung over my shoulder. At the end of it, under my left arm, hung 2 pouches, in one of which hung my powder, in the other my shot. At my back I carried my basket, and on my shoulder my gun. As for my face, the colour of it was not so mulatto-like as one might expect from a man not at all careful and living within 9 or 10 degrees of the equinox. My beard I had once suffered to grow till it was about 1/4 yard long. As I had both scissors and razor sufficient, I had cut it pretty short, except what grew on my upper lip, which I trimmed into a large pair of Mahometan whiskers, such as I had seen worn by some Turks at Sali. The Moors did not wear such, though the Turks did. Of these mustachios or whiskers, I will not say they were long enough to hang my hat upon them, but they were a length and shape monstrous enough, and in England would have passed for frightful. But all of this is by and by. As to my figure, I had so few to observe me that it was of no manner of consequence, so I say no more to that part. In this kind of figure I went on my new journey, as I was out 5 or 6 days. I travelled first along the seashore. I went over the land a nearer way, to the same height I was upon before. When looking forward to the point which lay out, I was surprised to see the sea all smooth and quiet. No rippling, no motion, no current, any more there than in any other places. Indeed, even the black rocks could not be seen. For reasons I could not name, I bethought myself that this was why the beast had run with such glee for its 3 nights, viz., that nothing moved in the sea. While rarely I felt anxious, at this time a sense of great peace did come upon me, nay, upon the entire island. 2 years more passed, and the beast and I were most pleased with our lives here. But now I come to a new scene of my life. The footprint, my terrors, my decisions. It happened one day, about a week after the last night of the moon, I was surprised with the print of a man's naked foot on the shore, which was very plain to be seen in the sand. I stood like one thunderstruck, or as if I had seen an apparition. I listened. I looked round me, but I could hear nothing, nor see anything. I went up the shore and down the shore, but it was all one. I went to it again to see if there were any more, and to observe if it might not be my fancy. But there was no room for that, for there was the print of a foot, toes, heel, and every part of a foot splayed wide upon the sand. After innumerable fluttering thoughts, like a man confused and out of myself, I came home to my fortification, terrified to the last degree, looking behind me at every 2 or 3 steps, mistaking every bush and tree and stump at a distance to be a man. Nor is it possible to describe how many wild ideas were found every moment in my fancy, and what strange, unaccountable whimsies came into my thoughts by the way. When I came to my castle, for so I think I called it ever after this, I fled into it like one pursued. Whether I went over by the ladder, or went in at the hole in the rock, which I had called a door, I cannot remember, nor could I remember the next morning. Never frightened hare fled to cover, or fox to earth, with more terror of mind than I to this retreat. I slept none that night. The farther I was from the occasion of my fright, the greater my apprehensions were. I was so embarrassed with my own frightful ideas of the thing, I formed nothing but dismal imaginations to myself, even though I was now a great way off it. Sometimes I fancied it must be the devil and reason joined in with me upon this supposition. How should any other thing in human shape come into the place? Where was the vessel that brought them? What marks were there, or any other footsteps? But then to think Satan would take human shape upon him, in such a place, to leave the print of his foot behind him. I considered the devil might have found out abundance of other ways to have terrified me than this of the single print of a foot. As I lived quite on the other side of the island, it was 10,000 to 1 whether I should ever see it or not. And in the sand, too, which the first surge of the sea upon a high wind would have defaced entirely. All this seemed inconsistent with the notions we entertain of the subtlety of the devil. Abundance of such things as these assisted to argue me out of all apprehensions of its being the devil. I presently concluded it must be some of the dangerous savages of the mainland who had wandered out to sea in their canoes and, either driven by the currents or by contrary winds, had made the island. They had been on shore but were gone away again to sea, being as loath, perhaps, to have stayed on my desolate island as I would have been to have had them. Thus my fear banished all my former confidence in God. I reproached myself with my laziness, that would not sow any more corn one year than would just serve me till the next season, as if no accident would intervene to prevent my enjoying the crop that was upon the ground. This I thought so just a reproof, I resolved for the future to have 2 or 3 years corn beforehand, so whatever might come, I might not perish for want of bread. How strange a checkerwork of providence is the life of man! That I should now tremble at the very apprehensions of seeing a man, and was ready to sink into the ground at but the shadow or silent appearance of a man's having set his foot in the island. One morning, lying in my bed and filled with thoughts about my danger from the appearances of savages, I found it discomposed me very much. Upon which these words of the scripture came into my thoughts. Call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver thee, and thou shalt glorify me. Upon this, rising out of my bed, my heart was not only comforted, but I was guided and encouraged to pray. When I had done praying, I took up my Bible, and, opening it to read, the first words presented to me were, Wait on the Lord, and be of good cheer, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. It is impossible to express the comfort this gave me. In answer, I thankfully laid down the book and was no more sad, at least on that occasion. In the middle of these cogitations, apprehensions, and reflections, it came into my thoughts all this might be a mere chimera of my own. This might be the print of my own foot, or e'en that of the beast, since distorted by the tides. This cheered me up a little too, and I began to persuade myself it was all a delusion, that it was nothing else but my own foot. Now I began to take courage and to peep abroad again, for I had not stirred out of my castle for 3 days and nights, so I began to starve for provisions. I had little or nothing within doors, but some barley cakes and water. I knew my goats wanted to be milked too, which was my evening diversion, and the poor creatures were in great pain and inconvenience for want of it. Indeed, it almost spoiled some of them and dried up their milk. As I went down thus 2 or 3 days, and having seen nothing, I began to be a little bolder, and to think there was nothing in it but my own imagination. But I could not persuade myself fully of this, till I should go down to the shore again, and see this print of a foot, and measure it by my own, and see if there was any similitude or fitness. The wind had dulled it somewhat, but still it was there in the damp sand. First, it appeared to me I could not possibly be on shore anywhere thereabouts. Secondly, when I came to measure the mark with my own foot, I found my foot not so large, and not as broad by a great deal. Also, there were particularities of the mark, such as the small holes by each toe, as though left by the beast's claws. Though this was most assuredly not a track of the beast. There also was an oddness I could not put a name to, as if the footprint maker had worn fine stockings stretched between each splayed toe. All these things filled my head with new imaginations and gave me the vapours again to the highest degree, so I shook with cold like one in an ague. I went home again filled with the belief some man or men had been on shore there, or the island was inhabited, and I might be surprised before I was aware. What course to take for my security I knew not. Oh, what ridiculous resolutions men take when possessed with fear! It deprives them of the use of those means which reason offers for their relief. The first thing I proposed to myself was to throw down my enclosures and turn all my tame cattle wild into the woods, lest the enemy should find them and then frequent the island in prospect of the same or the like booty. Then to the simple thing of digging up my 2 cornfields, lest they should find such a grain there and still be prompted to frequent the island. Then to demolish my bower and tent, that they might not see any vestiges of habitation, and be prompted to look farther in order to find out the persons inhabiting. These were the subjects of the first night's cogitations, After I was come home again, while the apprehensions which had so overrun my mind were fresh upon me, and my head was full of vapours as above. Thus fear of danger is 10,000 times more terrifying than danger itself, when apparent to the eyes. This confusion of my thoughts kept me awake all night, but in the morning I fell asleep. Having been, by the amusement of my mind, tired and my spirits exhausted, I slept and waked much better composed than I had ever been before. And now I began to think. Upon the utmost debate with myself, I concluded this island, which was so exceeding pleasant, fruitful, and no farther from the mainland than as I had seen, was not so abandoned as I might imagine. Although there were no stated inhabitants who lived on the spot, yet that there might sometimes come boats off from the shore who might come to this place. I had lived here 15 years now, and had not met with the least shadow or figure of any people yet. If at any time they should be driven here, it was probable they went away again as soon as ever they could, seeing they had never thought fit to fix here upon any occasion. The most I could suggest any danger from was from any casual accidental landing of straggling people from the main, who went off again with all possible speed, seldom staying one night on shore lest they should not have the help of the tides and daylight back again. Therefore, I had nothing to do but consider of some safe retreat in case I should see any savages land upon the spot. Now I began to repent I had dug my cave so large as to bring a door through again, which, as I said, came out beyond where my fortification joined to the rock. Upon considering this, therefore, I resolved to draw me a second fortification in the same manner of a semicircle at a distance from my wall, just where I had planted a double row of stakes about 12 years before, of which I made mention. These having been planted so thick before, they wanted but few piles to be driven between them that they might be thicker and stronger, and my wall would be soon finished. I now had a double wall. My outer wall was thickened with pieces of timber, old cables, and everything I could think of, to make it strong, and having in it 7 little holes about as big as I might put an arm out at. In the inside of this, I thickened my wall to about 10 feet thick, with continual bringing earth out of my cave, and laying it at the foot of the wall, and walking upon it. Through the 7 holes I contrived to plant the muskets like my cannon, and fitted them into frames that held them like a carriage, so I could fire all the 7 guns in 2 minutes' time. This wall I was many a weary month in finishing, and yet never thought myself safe till it was done. When this was done, I stuck all the ground without my wall, for a great length every way, as full with stakes or sticks of the osier-like wood as they could well stand. Insomuch, I believe, I might set in nearly 20,000 of them, leaving a pretty large space between them and my wall. I might have room to see an enemy, and they might have no shelter from the young trees if they attempted to approach my outer wall. Over these months, I am ashamed to say, I did give the beast excessive freedom and not attempt to watch through the smoked lens, or to exert any influence over its nature. It was my belief that the howls and cries of the beast might be heard for many miles, and perhaps the savages, upon hearing such sounds, would be less desiring to land upon my island. Indeed, perhaps such a thing had already happened many times in my long years here. I was at the expense of all this labour purely from my apprehensions on the account of the print of a man's foot which I had seen. For, as yet, I never saw any human creature come near the island. I had now lived 2 years under this uneasiness which, indeed, made my life much less comfortable than it was before, as may well be imagined by any who know what it is to live in the constant snare of fear. And this I must observe, with grief too, that the discomposure of my mind had 2 great impressions also upon the religious part of my thoughts. The dread of falling into the hands of savages and cannibals lay so upon my spirits that I seldom found myself in a due temper for application to my Maker, at least not with the sedate calmness and resignation of soul which I was wont to do. I rather prayed to God as under great affliction and pressure of mind, surrounded with danger, and in expectation every night of being murdered and devoured before morning. The Dark Church, My Plans, My Rational Mind. But to go on. I went about the whole island, searching for another private place, when, wandering more to the west point of the island than I had ever done yet, and looking out to sea, I thought I saw a boat upon the sea at a great distance. I had found a perspective glass or two in one of the seamen's chests, which I saved out of our ship, but I had it not about me. This was so remote I could not tell what to make of it, though I looked at it till my eyes were not able to hold to look any longer. Whether it was a boat or not, I do not know, but as I descended from the hill, I could see no more of it. I resolved to go no more out without a perspective glass in my pocket. When I was come down the hill to the end of the island, where, indeed, I had never been before, I was presently convinced that seeing the print of a man's foot was not such a strange thing in the island as I imagined. It was a special providence I was cast upon the side of the island where the savages never came. I should easily have known nothing was more frequent than for the canoes from the main, when they happened to be a little too far out at sea, to shoot over to that side of the island for harbour. When I was come down the hill to the shore, as I said above, being the southwest point of the island, I was confounded and amazed. Nor is it possible for me to express the horror of my mind at seeing the shore spread with skulls, hands, feet, and other bones of human bodies. I observed a place where there had been a fire made, and a circle dug in the earth, where I supposed the savage wretches, according to their dreadful customs, had sat down to their inhuman feastings upon the bodies of their fellow creatures. I further observed this whole corner of the island had been shaped and arranged to serve their needs, and just as I had made a homestead on my side of the island, the savages had made a church for their awful beliefs. Many trees had strange symbols and shapes cut within their bark, and these symbols were also painted large on many stones, although the growls of the beast told me what the paint most certainly was. I stepped over the bones and skulls to closer examine a tree, and saw the cuts and carvings were very old. The sand itself, indeed, was all red with long use. This savage church had been here on my island long before the fateful night that brought the beast and I to the shores here, though now I wondered the wisdom of calling it my island, as if it had ever been. 12 great strides from the fire circle was a large ironwood tree, one which dwarfed all I had ever seen, and all things had been cleared away from it. Were 4 men to stretch their arms, only then might they just encircle the base of such a giant, and it took another 12 steps to walk about and examine it. To the height of 2 men had the living tree been shaped, and cut to make a living totem or statue from the wood, which continued to grow as its roots and leaves attested. It was the shape of a great man, one who crouched like a child at play, or an animal, I could not say which. Upon his carved feet and hands were great claws, like those of the beast, which made these appendages even longer and more disturbing. His head was large and his eyes long and wide. A beard of thick, fat hairs trailed down his face, and crouched as he was, the hairs all but reached his ankles. And then a cold chill did creep through my limbs, for I knew this figure and had seen it before. This was the same cuttlefish dream lord who had appeared to me in a fever vision some 17 years before, when I was only 10 months onto the island. How was such a thing possible? For it to be a ne'er-before-seen creation wholly of my mind, and yet a figure of worship to the savages. I durst not approach too close to this thing, but the cuts and carving did appear even older than those on the other trees, and I did bethought myself that I could only guess how long this totem had stood on the island. 100 years? 3? Was it carved when Rome still ruled England, or when Moses toiled in Egypt? My mind said such was impossible, yet my heart felt some truth in such thoughts. Within me the beast made many growls. The smell of flesh and blood excited it, as such things do, but it was also cowed by the sight of this large totem. It did react to this place much as it had to the shadowed valley I had found many years before, and ne'er visited again. I was so astonished with the sight of these things and the reactions of the beast, I entertained no notions of any danger to myself from it for a long while. All my apprehensions were buried in the thoughts of such a fearsome creature of the totem, the awful rituals performed before it, and the horror of the degeneracy of human nature, which, though I had heard of it often, yet I never had so near a view of before. In short, I turned away my face from the horrid spectacle. My stomach grew sick, and I was just at the point of fainting when nature discharged the disorder from my stomach. Having vomited with uncommon violence, I was a little relieved, but could not bear to stay in the place a moment longer. I got me up the hill again, with all the speed I could, and walked on towards my own habitation. When I came a little out of that part of the island, I stood still a while, as amazed, and then recovering myself, I looked up with the utmost affection of my soul, and gave God thanks that had cast my first lot in a part of the world where I was distinguished from such dreadful creatures as these. In this frame of thankfulness, I went home to my castle, and began to be easier now as to the safety of my circumstances than ever I was before. I observed these wretches never came to this island in search of what they could get, perhaps not seeking, not wanting, or not expecting anything here aside from the performance of their awful customs and feast within their church, as I must think of it. I knew I had been here now almost 18 years, and never saw the least footsteps of human creature there before. I might be 18 years more as concealed as I was now if I did not discover myself to them, which I had no manner of occasion to do. Yet I entertained such an abhorrence of the savage wretches I have been speaking of, and of the wretched inhuman custom of their devouring and eating one another up, I continued pensive and sad, and kept close within my own circle for almost 2 years after this. When I say my own circle, I mean by it my three plantations, viz. My castle, my country seat, which I called my bower, and my enclosure in the woods. Nor did I look after this for any other use than as an enclosure for my goats. The aversion which nature gave me to these hellish wretches was such that I was as fearful of seeing them as of seeing the devil himself. If I had happened to have fallen into their hands, I knew what would have been my lot. Also within this time did my memories go back to little Paul, who died speaking awful words. The parrot did tell of a great dreamer who would feed upon my soul. And yet here, had I not found a graven image of a thing from my dreams, the bearded dream lord, a thing which those who eat the bodies of men did worship as a saint or icon? Were the awful, unknowable words Paul spoke at his end the words of savages? The two things, viz. The dream lord and Paul's dire prophecy, did seem surely linked. Time, however, and the satisfaction I was in no danger of being discovered by these people, began to wear off my uneasiness. I began to live just in the same composed manner as before, with this difference. I used more caution, and kept my eyes more about me than I did before, lest I should happen to be seen by any of them. Particularly, I was more cautious of firing my gun, lest any of them, being on the island, should happen to hear it. It was therefore a very good providence to me I had furnished myself with a tame breed of goats, and I had no need to hunt any more about the woods. If I did catch any of them after this, it was by traps and snares, as I had done before. So for 2 years after this, I believe I never fired my gun once off, though I never went without it. Which was more, As I had saved 3 pistols out of our ship, I always carried at least 2 of them out with me, sticking them in my goatskin belt. I also furnished up one of the great cutlasses I had out of the ship and made me a belt to hang it on. I was now a most formidable fellow to look at when I went abroad, if you add to the former description of myself the particular of 2 pistols and a great broadsword hanging at my side. Things going on thus for some time, I seemed, excepting these cautions, to be reduced to my former calm, sedate way of living. Even the beast still ran across the island, though now I was keenly aware that it never ran or hunted in the southwest point or in the shadowed valley. All these things tended to show me more and more how far my condition was from being miserable compared to some others, even if it were not perfect. As in my present condition, there were not many things which I wanted, so, indeed, I thought the frights I had been in about these savage wretches and the concern I had been in for my own preservation had taken off the edge of my invention for my own conveniences. But my invention now ran quite another way. Night and day, I could think of nothing but how I might destroy some of these monsters in their cruel, bloody ritual, and, if possible, save the victim they should bring hither to destroy. It would take up a larger volume than this whole work to set down all the contrivances I brooded upon for destroying these creatures, or at least frightening them so as to prevent their coming hither any more. But all this was abortive. Nothing could be possible to take effect unless I was to be there to do it myself. And what could one man do among them, when perhaps there might be 20 or 30 of them together, with their darts or their bows and arrows, with which they could shoot as true to a mark as I could with my gun? Even the beast would be hard-pressed against such numbers, though their weapons could do naught to kill it. Sometimes I thought of digging a hole under the place where they had made their fire and putting in 5 or 6 pounds of gunpowder, which, when they kindled their fire, would take fire and blow up all that was near to it. But as, in the first place, I should be unwilling to waste so much powder upon them, my store being now within the quantity of 1 barrel, so neither could I be sure of its going off at any certain time when it might surprise them. At best, it would do little more than just blow the fire about their ears and fright them, but not sufficient to make them forsake the place. So I laid it aside, and then proposed I would place myself in ambush in some convenient place, with my 3 guns all double-loaded, and in the middle of their bloody ceremony let fly at them, when I should be sure to kill or wound perhaps 2 or 3 at every shot. Then, falling in upon them with my 3 pistols and my sword, I made no doubt but if there were 20 I should kill them all. This fancy pleased my thoughts for some weeks. I went so far with it in my imagination, I employed myself several days to find out proper places to put myself in ambuscade, as I said, to watch for them. I went to the dark church itself, which was now grown more familiar to me. But while my mind was thus filled with thoughts of revenge and the bloody putting 20 or 30 of them to the sword, as I may call it, the unease I had at the place abetted my malice. Well, at length I found a place in the side of the hill where I was satisfied I might wait till I saw any of their boats coming. There was a hollow large enough to conceal me. There I might sit and observe all their bloody doings, and take my full aim at their heads when they were so close together, as it would be next to impossible I should miss my shot, or that I could fail wounding 3 or 4 of them at the first shot. After I had thus laid the scheme of my design, and, in my imagination, put it in practice, I made my tour every morning up to the top of the hill, which was from my castle about 3 miles, to see if I could observe any boats upon the sea coming near the island, or standing over towards it. But I began to tire of this hard duty after I had, for 2 or 3 months, constantly kept watch, but came always back without any discovery. There was not in all that time the least appearance, not only on or near the shore, but on the whole ocean, so far as my eyes or glasses could reach, every way. As long as I kept my daily tour to the hill to look out, My spirit seemed to be all the while in a suitable form for so outrageous an execution as the killing of 20 or 30 naked savages. But now, when I began to be weary of the fruitless excursion which I had made so far every morning in vain, so my opinion of the action itself began to alter. I began, with cooler and calmer thoughts which entered my mind, to consider what I was going to engage in. What authority or call had I to pretend to be judge and executioner upon these men as criminals, whom heaven had thought fit for so many ages to suffer to go on unpunished? I debated this very often with myself thus. How do I know what God himself judges in this particular case? It is certain these people do not commit this as a crime. They do not know it to be an offense and then commit it in defiance of divine justice, as we do in almost all the sins we commit. They think it no more a crime to kill a captive taken in war than we do to kill an ox, nor to eat human flesh than we do to eat mutton. Indeed, they were much as the beast in this manner. When I consider this a little, it followed that I was certainly in the wrong in it. These people were not murderers in the sense I had before condemned them in my thoughts, any more than the beast was a murderer for what it had done. It had a fine animal mind, but still animal, with no understanding of sin or crime or justice. That it killed the mate was indeed an awful thing, but it was not an evil thing. As I have oft said before, the beast is not evil. Indeed, if it were, should I have not put myself and it to death to punish it? No, I had been satisfied to leave it here, where it enjoyed freedom with no danger to others. These considerations put me to a pause. I began, by little and little, to be off my design, and to conclude I had taken wrong measures in my resolution to attack the savages. It was not my business to meddle with them unless they first attacked me, and this it was my business, if possible, to prevent. If I were discovered and attacked by them, I knew my duty. On the other hand, I argued with myself, this was the way to ruin and destroy myself. Unless I was sure to kill every one that not only should be on shore at that time, but that should ever come on shore afterwards, if but one of them escaped to tell their country people what had happened, they would come over again by thousands to revenge the death of their fellow. Upon the whole, I concluded, that neither in principle nor in policy I ought to concern myself in this affair. My business was, by all possible means, to conceal myself from them, and not to leave the least signal to them to guess by that there were any living creatures upon the island of human shape. My new cave, dark symbols, my resolution. In this disposition I continued for near a year after this. So far was I from desiring an occasion for falling upon these wretches in all that time, I never once went up the hill to see whether there were any of them in sight, or to know whether any of them had been on shore there or not, that I might not be tempted to renew any of my contrivances against them. I kept myself more retired than ever, and seldom went from my cell. Certain it is, these savage people who sometimes haunted this island never came with any thoughts of finding anything here aside from their great totem, and consequently never wandered off from the coast. I doubt not, but they might have been several times on shore, after my apprehensions of them had made me cautious, as well as before. Indeed, I looked back with some horror upon the thoughts of what my condition would have been if I had chopped upon them and been discovered before that, when, naked and unarmed, except with one gun, and that loaded often with only small shot, I walked everywhere, peering about the island to see what I could get. What a surprise should I have been in if, when I discovered the print of a man's foot, I had instead seen 15 or 20 cannibals and found them pursuing me. I believe the reader of this will not think it strange if I confess these anxieties, these constant dangers I lived in, and the concern that was now upon me, put an end to all invention and to all the contrivances I had laid for my future accommodations and conveniences. I had the care of my safety more now upon my hands than that of my food. I cared not to drive a nail or chop a stick of wood for fear the noise I might make should be heard. Much less would I fire a gun. Above all, I was uneasy at making any fire, lest the smoke, which is visible at a great distance in the day, should betray me. For this reason, I removed that part of my business which required fire into my new apartment in the woods. After some time, I found, to my unspeakable consolation, a mere natural cave in the earth, which went in a vast way, and where, I dare say, no savage, had he been in the mouth of it, would be so hardy as to venture in. Nor would any man else, but one who, like me, wanted nothing so much as a safe retreat. The place was a most delightful cavity or grotto of its kind, as could be expected, though perfectly dark. The floor was dry and level, and had a sort of a small loose gravel upon it, so there was no nauseous or venomous creature to be seen, neither was there any damp or wet on the sides or roof. The only difficulty in it was the entrance. However, as it was a place of security, and such a retreat as I wanted, I thought that was a convenience. I was rejoiced at the discovery, and resolved, without any delay, to bring some of those things which I was most anxious about to this place. Particularly, I resolved to bring hither my magazine of powder and all my spare arms. I kept at my castle only 7, which stood ready mounted, like pieces of cannon, on my outmost fence, and were ready also to take out upon any expedition. I carried all the way thither, never keeping above 2 or 3 pounds of powder with me in my castle, for fear of a surprise of any kind. I also carried thither all the lead I had left for bullets. I fancied myself now like one of the ancient giants, which were said to live in caves in the rocks, where none could come at them. For I persuaded myself, while I was here, if 500 savages were to hunt me, they could never find me out. If they did, they would not venture to attack me here. The beast and I were now in the 22nd year of our residence in this island, and were so naturalized to the place and the manner of living, that could I have but enjoyed the certainty no savages would come to the place to disturb me, we could have been content to have capitulated for spending the rest of our time there. Even to the last moment, till I had laid me down and died. But it was otherwise directed. It may not be amiss for all people who shall meet with my story to make this just observation from it, viz., how frequently in the course of our lives the evil which in itself we seek most to shun, and which is the most dreadful to us, is oftentimes the very means or door of our deliverance, by which alone we can be raised again from the affliction we are fallen into. I could give many examples of this in the course of my unaccountable life, but in nothing was it more remarkable than in the circumstances of my last years of solitary residence in this island. It was now the month of December, as I said above, in my 22nd year. This being the southern solstice, for winter I cannot call it, was the particular time of my harvest, and required my being pretty much abroad in the fields. When going out pretty early in the morning, even before it was thorough daylight, I was surprised with seeing a light from some fire upon the shore, at a distance from me of about 2 miles, towards the end of the island where I had observed some savages had been, as before. And not on the other side, but, to my great affliction, it was on my side of the island. I was indeed terribly surprised at the sight, and stopped short within my grove, not daring to go out, lest I might be surprised. Yet I had no more peace within from the apprehensions I had that if these savages, in rambling over the island, should find my corn standing or cut, or any of my works and improvements, they would conclude there were people in the place, and would never give over till they had found me out. In this extremity, I went back to my castle, pulled up the ladder after me, and made all things without look as wild and natural as I could. Then I prepared myself within, putting myself in a posture of defense. I loaded all my cannon, as I called them, that is to say, my muskets, which were mounted upon my new fortification, and all my pistols, and resolved to defend myself to the last gasp. I continued in this posture about 2 hours, and began to be mighty impatient for intelligence abroad, for I had no spies to send out. After sitting a while longer, and musing what I should do in this, I was not able to bear sitting in ignorance any longer. Setting up my ladder to the side of the hill where there was a flat place, and then pulling the ladder up after me, I set it up again and mounted to the top of the hill. Pulling out my perspective glass, which I had taken on purpose, I laid me down flat on my belly on the ground and began to look for the place. I found there were no less than 9 naked savages, with dark eyes and skin the color of wetted clay, sitting around a small fire they had made. Not to warm them, for they had no need of that, the weather being extremely hot, but, as I supposed, to dress some of their barbarous diet of human flesh, which they had brought with them. Whether alive or dead, I could not tell. They had 2 canoes with them, which they had hauled up upon the shore, and as it was then tide of ebb, they seemed to me to wait for the return of the flood to go away again. It is not easy to imagine what confusion this sight put me into, especially seeing them come on my side of the island and so near me too. But when I considered their coming must be always with the current of the ebb, I began afterwards to be more sedate in my mind, being satisfied I might go abroad with safety all the time of the tide of flood, if they were not on shore before. Having made this observation, I went abroad about my harvest work with more composure. As I expected, so it proved. As soon as the tide made to the westward, I saw them all take boat and paddle away. I should have observed, for an hour or more before they went off, they went a-dancing, and I could discern their hunched postures and gestures by my glass, although something unnameable in their writhing motions did bother my thoughts. I could not perceive, by my nicest observation, but they were stark naked, and had not the least covering upon them. As soon as I saw them shipped and gone, I took 2 guns upon my shoulders and 2 pistols in my girdle and my great sword by my side, and with all the speed I was able to make went away to the hill where I had discovered the first appearance of all. As soon as I got thither, which was not less than an hour, for I could not go apace, being so loaden with arms as I was, I perceived there had been 3 canoes more of savages at that place. Looking out farther, I saw they were all at sea together, making over for the main. This was a dreadful sight to me, especially as, going down to the shore, I could see the marks of horror which the dismal work they had been about had left behind it, viz. The blood, the bones, and part of the flesh of human bodies, all eaten and devoured by those wretches with merriment and sport. Even my trees and stones had been marked with their strange symbols. I was so filled with indignation at the sight, I now began to premeditate the destruction of the next I saw there, let them be whom or how many soever. I took my hatchet to the trees to gouge the marks from their bark, and I could sense a great satisfaction in the spirit of the beast when this was done. When the tide came, it took the bits of flesh, and I scrubbed the stones as a sailor scrubs his deck until the dark symbols vanished and the stones were cleansed. It seemed evident to me the visits which they made thus to this island were not very frequent, for it was above 15 months before any of them came on shore there again. I neither saw them nor any footsteps or signals of them in all that time. As to the rainy seasons, then they are sure not to come abroad, at least not so far. Yet all this while I lived uncomfortably by reason of the constant apprehensions of their coming upon me by surprise. I observe the expectation of evil is more bitter than the suffering, especially if there is no room to shake off that expectation or those apprehensions. During all this time, I was in the murdering humour, and took up most of my hours in contriving how to fall upon them the very next time I should see them, especially if they should be divided into two parties, as they were the last time. I spent my days now in a great perplexity and anxiety of mind, expecting I should, one day or other, fall into the hands of these merciless creatures. If I did at any time venture abroad, it was not without looking round me with the greatest care and caution imaginable. And now I found, to my great comfort, how happy it was I had provided a tame flock or herds of goats. I durst not, upon any account, fire my gun, especially near that side of the island where they usually came, lest I should alarm the savages. If they had fled from me now, I was sure to have them come again, with perhaps 200 or 300 canoes with them, and then I knew what to expect. However, I wore out 1 year and 3 months more before I ever saw any more of the savages, and then I found them again. It is true, they might have been there once or twice, but either they made no stay, or at least I did not see them. Nor did any memories of them come from the beast, which had once again reached one of its territorial phases, and stalked our shores and savannas and woods each night of the moon. The perturbation of my mind, and its mind, during this 15 or 16 months interval, was very great. In the day, great troubles overwhelmed my mind, and in the night I dreamed often of killing the savages, and of the reasons why I might justify the doing of it. But in the month of May, as near as I could calculate, and in my 24th year, I had a very strange encounter. A new shipwreck, useless wealth, my decision. It was in the middle of May, on the 16th day, I think, as well as my poor wooden calendar would reckon, for I marked all upon the post still, and 4 nights had passed since the beast last ran free. It blew a very great storm of wind all day, with a great deal of lightning and thunder, and a very foul night it was after it. In many ways it did remind me of that night on the Yarmouth Roads, when white worms did rise from the sea, shoggoths, as the crew called them, to ravage our ship, and scuttle it faster than e'en 2 dozen sailors could. The sea threw itself at the shore in great, loud hills of water, in a word, as loud as the wind and the thunder. I knew not what was the particular occasion of it, but as I was reading, and taken up with very serious thoughts about my present condition, I was surprised with the noise of a gun fired at sea. This was, to be sure, a surprise quite of a different nature from any I had met with before, for the notions this put into my thoughts were quite of another kind. I started up in the greatest haste imaginable, clapped my ladder to the middle place of the rock, and pulled it after me. Mounting it the second time, I got to the top of the hill the very moment a flash of fire bid me listen for a second gun, which, in about 30 minutes, I heard. I considered this must be some ship in distress, and they had some comrade or some other ship in company, and fired these guns for signals to obtain help. I had the presence of mind at that minute to think, though I could not accept help from them, it might be I might help them. So I brought together all the dry wood I could get at hand, and making a good handsome pile, I set it on fire upon the hill. The wood was dry and blazed, and though the wind blew very hard, yet it burnt fairly out, so I was certain if there was any such thing as a ship, they must need see it, and no doubt they did. As soon as ever my fire blazed up, I heard another gun, and after that several others, all from the same quarter. I plied my fire all night long. When it was broad day, and the air cleared up, I saw something at a great distance at sea, full east of the island. Whether a sail or a hull I could not distinguish, no, not with my glass. The distance was so great, and the weather still something hazy also. I looked at it all day, and soon perceived it did not move, so I concluded it was a ship at anchor, Being eager, you may be sure, to be satisfied, I took my gun in my hand and ran towards the south side of the island. Getting up there, the weather by this time being perfectly clear, I could see, to my great sorrow, the wreck of a ship, cast away in the night upon those jagged black rocks which I found when I was out in my raft. It seemed these men, whoever they were, being out of their knowledge, and the black rocks being under water at this time, had been driven upon them in the night, the wind blowing hard. Had they seen the island, as I supposed they did not, they must have endeavoured to have saved themselves on shore by the help of their boat. But their firing off guns for help when they saw, as I imagined, my fire, filled me with many thoughts. In the condition I was in, I could do no more than look upon the misery of the poor men and pity them. I cannot explain, by any possible energy of words, what a strange longing of desires I felt in my soul upon this sight. In all the time of my solitary life, I never felt so earnest a desire after the society of my fellow creatures, or so deep a regret at the want of it. Let the naturalists explain these things, and the reason and manner of them. It was doubtless the effect of ardent wishes, and of strong ideas formed in my mind, realizing the comfort which the conversation of one of my fellow Englishmen would have been to me. But it was not to be. Till the last year of my being on this island, I never knew whether any were saved out of that ship or no. I had only the affliction, some days after, to see the corpse of a drowned boy come on shore at the end of the island, which was next the shipwreck, only a mile from the heathen church of the savages. He had no clothes on but a seaman's waistcoat, a pair of open-kneed linen drawers, and a blue linen shirt. Nothing to direct me so much as to guess what nation he was of. He had nothing in his pockets but 2 pieces of 8 and a tobacco pipe. The last was to me of 10 times more value than the first. It was now calm, and I had a great mind to venture out on my raft to this wreck, not doubting but I might find something on board that might be useful to me. But that did not altogether press me so much as the possibility there might be yet some living creature on board whose life I might not only save, but might, by saving that life, comfort my own to the last degree, and perhaps balance the scales for the lost mate of my own voyage. Committing the rest to Providence, I thought the impression was so strong upon my mind it could not be resisted. It must come from some invisible direction, and I should be wanting to myself if I did not go. Under the power of this impression, I hastened back to my castle, prepared everything for my voyage, and thus, loading myself with everything necessary, I went down to my raft, put her afloat, and loaded all my cargo on her. Praying to God to direct my voyage, I resolved the next morning to set out with the first of the tide. I first made a little out to sea, full north, till I began to feel the benefit of the current which carried me at a great rate, and yet did not so hurry me as the current on the south side had done before, so as to take from me all government of the raft. Having a strong steerage with my paddle, I went at a great rate for the wreck, and in less than 2 hours I came up to it. It was a dismal sight to look at. The ship, which, by its building, was Spanish, stuck fast, jammed in between 2 of the black spires. All the stern and quarter of her were beaten to pieces with the sea. As her forecastle, which stuck in the rocks, had run on with great violence, her mainmast and foremast were broken short off. But her bowsprit was sound, and the head and bow appeared firm. When I came close, a dog appeared upon her, who, seeing me coming, yelped and cried as soon as I called him. I took him onto the raft, but found him almost dead with hunger and thirst, so weak he could not flee from me, though it was plain in his eyes he desired to do so. I gave him a cake of my bread, and he devoured it like a ravenous wolf. I then gave the poor creature some fresh water, with which, if I would have let him, he would have burst himself. After this, I went on board. The first sight I met was the two men drowned in the cookroom or forecastle of the ship. I concluded when the ship struck, the men were not able to bear it and were strangled with the constant rushing in of the water, as much as if they had been under water. Besides the dog, there was nothing left in the ship that had life, nor any goods I could see but what were spoiled by the water. There were some casks of liquor, whether wine or brandy, I knew not, which lay lower in the hold, and which I could see, but they were too big to meddle with. I saw several chests, which I believed belonged to some of the seamen, and I got two of them onto the raft, without examining what was in them. I saw at this point the dog had fled from me, as most animals tended to do, and was swimming for the island with its head poked above the waves. I do not know if it made the shore, and one way or another I never laid eyes on it again. Had the stern of the ship been fixed, and the forepart broken off, I am persuaded I might have made a good voyage. By what I found in these two chests, I had room to suppose the ship had a great deal of wealth on board, but of no use at that time to anybody. I found, besides these chests, a little cask full of liquor, which I got into my raft with much difficulty. There were several muskets in the cabin, and a great powder horn, with about 4 pounds of powder in it. I took a fire shovel and tongs, which I wanted extremely. Also, two little brass kettles, a copper pot to make chocolate, and a gridiron. With this cargo, I came away, the tide beginning to make home again. The same evening, about an hour within night, I reached the island again, weary and fatigued to the last degree. I reposed that night on the raft. In the morning, I resolved to harbour what I had got in my new cave, and not carry it home to my castle. After refreshing myself, I got all my cargo on shore, and began to examine the particulars. The cask of liquor I found to be a kind of rum, but not such as we had at the Brazils, and not at all good. When I came to open the chests, I found several things of great use to me. I found in one a fine case of bottles filled with cordial waters, fine and very good. I found two pots of very good saccades, or sweetmeats, so fastened on the top the salt water had not hurt them. I found some very good shirts, which were very welcome to me, and about a dozen and a half of white linen handkerchiefs and coloured neckcloths. When I came to the till in the chest, I found there 3 great bags of pieces of 8, which held about 1,100 pieces in all. In one of them, wrapped up in a paper, 6 doubloons of gold and some small bars or wedges of gold. I suppose they might all weigh near a pound. In the other chest were some clothes, but of little value. By the circumstances, it must have belonged to the gunner's mate, though there was no powder in it, except 2 pounds of fine glazed powder in 3 small flasks. Upon the whole, I got very little by this voyage that was of any use to me. As to the money, I had no manner of occasion for it. It was to me as the dirt under my feet. I would have given it all for 3 or 4 pair of English shoes and stockings. I had indeed got 2 pair of shoes now, which I took off the feet of the 2 drowned men, and I found 2 pair more in one of the chests, which were very welcome to me. But they were not like our English shoes, either for ease or service, being rather what we call pumps than shoes. I found in this seaman's chest about 50 pieces of 8 in rials, but no gold. I suppose this belonged to a poorer man than the other, which seemed to belong to some officer. However, I lugged this money home to my cave and laid it up, as I had done that before, which I brought from our own ship. It was a great pity, as I said, the other part of this ship had not come to my share. I am satisfied I might have loaded my raft several times over with money, and thought if I ever returned to England it might lie here safe enough till I may come again and fetch it. Having now brought all my things on shore and secured them, I went back to my raft and rowed or paddled her along the shore to her old harbour, where I laid her up and made the best of my way to my old habitation, where I found everything safe and quiet. I began now to repose myself, live after my old fashion, and take care of my affairs. If at any time I did stir with any freedom, it was always to the east part of the island, where I was pretty well satisfied the savages never came, and where I could go without so many precautions and such a load of arms and ammunition as I always carried with me if I went the other way. I had more wealth, indeed, than I had before, but was not at all the richer. I had no more use for it than the Indians of Peru had before the Spaniards came there. I lived in this condition near 2 years more. Sometimes I was for making another voyage to the wreck, though my reason told me there was nothing left there worth the hazard of my voyage. It was one of the nights in the rainy season in March. I was lying in the mate's hammock, awake. Very well in health, had no pain, no uneasiness of body, nor any uneasiness of mind more than ordinary, but could by no means close my eyes. No, not a wink all night long, otherwise than as follows. It is impossible to set down the innumerable crowd of thoughts that whirled through that great thoroughfare of the brain in this night's time. In my reflections, I was comparing the happy posture of my affairs in the first years of my habitation here on this land, compared to the life of anxiety, fear, and care, which I had lived ever since I had seen the print of a foot in the sand, and further found the dark church that had been prophesied by my parrot, Paul. I did believe the savages had frequented the island even all the while, and might have been several hundreds of them at times on shore. But I had never known it, and was incapable of any apprehensions about it. My satisfaction was perfect, though my danger was the same. After these thoughts had for some time entertained me, I came to reflect upon the real danger I had been in for so many years in this very island, and how I had walked about in the greatest security with all possible tranquillity, even when, perhaps, nothing but the brow of a hill, a great tree, or the casual approach of night had been between me and the worst kind of destruction. When these thoughts were over, my head was for some time taken up in considering the nature of these twisted creatures. I mean, the cannibals. How had it come to pass in the world that the wise governor of all things should give up any of his creatures to such inhumanity? As this ended in some fruitless speculations, it occurred to me to inquire what part of the world these wretches lived in, how far off the coast was from whence they came, what they ventured over so far from home for. Had they come all this way to build their dark church, or had they discovered it here in waiting for them? What kind of boats had the savages, and by what means did they travel the high seas? And why might I not order myself and my business so that I might be as able to go over thither as they were to come to me? This was key in my thoughts. I did reflect that this island, which I would often think of as mine alone, was perhaps never a safe place. I was neither alone here nor safe, and most evidence would say, at the least, my life and immortal soul may be at great risk. Indeed, upon further reflection, it seemed the beast had oft times tried to warn me of the wrongness here, as a loyal dog does warn its master from danger. As such, there was little doubt what my course must be now. The time of penance had come to an end. The beast and I must, at first chance, escape this accursed island. My dream companion, the savages, the prisoner. When this had agitated my thoughts for 2 hours or more, and my pulse beat as if I had been in a fever merely with the extraordinary fervor of my mind about it, nature threw me into a sound sleep. One would have thought I should have dreamt of it, but I did not, nor of anything relating to it. No, I dreamed, as I was going out in the morning, as usual, from my castle, I saw upon the shore 2 canoes and 11 savages coming to land. In my vision, they were the same creatures I had seen through my perspective glass, with glossy grey skin, most unlike the flesh of Negroes, yet also they had wide eyes that recalled to me the eyes of the lowest creatures, viz. Frogs and fish. They brought with them another savage, whom they were going to kill in order to eat him. The savage they were going to kill jumped away and ran for his life. I thought, in my sleep, he came running into my little thick grove before my fortification to hide himself. I, seeing him alone and not perceiving the others sought him that way, showed myself to him, and smiling upon him, encouraged him. He kneels down to me, seeming to pray me to assist him. Upon which I showed him my ladder and carried him into my cave, and he became my servant. As soon as I had got this man, I said to myself, "Now I may venture to the..."